this flute that we just listened to, Japanese shakuhachi, the essence of that music is, of course, not in the sounds, but in the spaces between the sounds. So when you listen to music like that, it's helpful to, one could say, almost pay more attention to the spaces than to the sounds. So the sounds point to that. And that is similar in some paintings, Japanese, Chinese, where you see a little rock in one corner, a branch somewhere in some other corner, and it's mostly empty space, nothing much there. And so the contemplation of that can, if you pay attention to empty space instead of paying attention to the little that's there in the empty space and talk about that, but acknowledge, be aware of the empty space, which you can only do through the empty space within yourself. To be aware of the empty space, either the space in the music or the space in the painting, the emptiness there, to acknowledge it, to be aware of it, is through that within yourself. Not never through thought. Because the empty space is the formless. Thought is form. And the formless is your essence identity. And then, of course, you have a temporary form identity, physical, psychological form. But only knowing yourself as the form identity is bondage, is ignorance, is delusion, no matter how clever the form identity is. No matter how much knowledge the form identity has, no matter how many experiences the form identity has accumulated and identifies with as me, it is ignorance. Only to know yourself as the form, physical body, mental form, psychological form of me, the mind-made image, me. And then, in the truest sense of the word, you don't know who you are. And who you think you are is an illusory entity. And because it's illusory, it's never at ease. You can never be yourself through the illusory entity. And then the illusory entity seeks, because it knows its own incompleteness and lack, and then it seeks to strengthen the illusion. It seeks to add more to the illusion, believing by adding more to the illusion, finally you arrive at something substantial and true and permanent and lasting beyond decay, and can never find it, because you don't know yourself as the formless. So we are here to know ourselves as the formless. And in any situation, as you move about this world, which is the world of form, the world will exert its pull upon you. In any interaction with another human being, the question is there space in the interaction? Or is the interaction entirely through form, mind? And I'm often sometimes surprised, sometimes people who are already able to allow that stillness that is intrinsically one with the formless to arise, when they get challenged by the world, they get totally drawn into whatever form the challenge takes and the reaction takes. They get immediately lost and believe that something out here or in their minds, which is also out here, they believe that something out here matters, is vitally important. And so the world seduces you, that includes of course the mind, the world seduces you into believing that this matters absolutely and you must give me your total attention. And so you get lost in your reaction, which is also a form, a conditioned form, and you are totally in it. And then you are talking to someone, and it's very serious, you must listen to me. This is what happened, and now what are we going to do about it? Or there's fear. Oh, my God, what's going to? This is dreadful. It's all. Your whole self is drawn into the. Space is lost, and all you have is form. So that means you get lost completely in the form. And this is when you, the whole civilization is lost in that. When you listen to the news, there's no sense of space. There's the newsreader is very serious and reads out all these things that matter so much, and everything is very problematic, because if it's not problematic, it doesn't reach the news. It doesn't need to be deep or meaningful or whatever. No, it needs to be problematic. There must be something here that is news. So those people who are themselves lost in form, they select the news for you. And then it's presented as it matters. This is these problems are so important, and the potentially redeeming dimension, redemptive, redeeming, whatever. They don't know it. There's no space around it whatsoever. So you get seduced by the world into believing that that's all there is, and then the world becomes more important to you than God. If you use theistic language, you might say, no, all I want is God's realization, whatever, liberation, self-realization. All I really want is that. And 5 minutes later, what you really want is this situation matters absolutely. you get drawn into that, and then, so the question is, when you say, I want God, self-realization, it's true, when you say it, it's true, but 5 minutes later, you don't want it anymore, you want the world. Because to say, I want God, means I'm willing to enter the surrendered state of consciousness. No, I'm willing to enter surrender. And nothing else matters. It's also saying, I want peace. And that is the only true thing that I want is peace. And a little later the world comes in and then you want something else. In the text called The Course in Miracles, which was a channeled teaching, there are the beautiful lines, I want the peace of God. To say these words means nothing, is nothing, but to mean these words is everything. Nobody can mean these words and not be healed, which means, of course, not be whole, not be yourself. To truly want it. So we have the two. When you are not in the state of surrender, are you? People say, I can't surrender. Is it that you can't, or that you are not willing? You have to look, there are two perspectives on the same thing. I'm not able, or perhaps if you look closely, there's something in you that doesn't want to surrender, that wants the non-peace. And to see that there is a movement in you that is very deep, that is true, that wants realization, wants peace. There's another movement in you that does not want it. And that can very easily obscure the deeper essence within yourself that wants peace. It's important to realize that there is a conditioned movement in you that wants problems and conflict rather than peace. Once you know it, it's fine. And once you can see it even as it comes up and operates, and that may include, of course, the pain body, but it is a conditioned mind movement that is one with the egoic sense of self, which periodically and very frequently needs to enter the state of conflict to sustain itself. The mind-made egoic self cannot live for very long without entering conflict and inhabiting a world of problems. It needs to create that to sustain itself. If you don't know that, you get lost in that compulsive need, which could also be called in humans the addiction to suffering. In humans, and you need to see it within yourself that that is there and it's not personal. If you think it's a personal problem of mine, then you get trapped even more deeply. The addiction to suffering, the need for conflict is unconscious, and it is how that separate identity, that is mind, the egoic identity, keeps its boundaries intact. the boundaries between me and all those others, all those out there, other people, my enemies in the form of people or situations or places, or this moment. So it occasionally you get a relief, and then for a little while you're, and then the need, the addiction to suffering comes back, and when you don't know it, you believe that the world around you is making you suffer, is doing it to you. And that is the essence of unconsciousness. You then believe that the world is basically out to put obstacles in your path. This is how most people experience life and the universe. It seems like I can never be at peace for long, and suddenly the world putting obstacles in my way, it's happening again. God, why does it always have to happen to me? And then you react. So it looks as if the world were doing it to you. And so you don't realize that that need comes from within. That's already dysfunctional, it's normal, and it's not personal. Then you take the dysfunction a little bit further, and then we can see that it's actually insane. The belief that the world is doing something to me becomes then paranoia or paranoid schizophrenia. And when you take it just a little bit further, then you can see, it's actually quite mad. But even before it's diagnosed as paranoia, it's already mad. And so if you're diagnosed with paranoia, then you can tell yourself, just because you have paranoia doesn't mean they're not out to get you. So it is liberation already, it is liberating to see in oneself that movement that we could call the addiction to suffering, the need for conflict, to see it. That's already, you're becoming free in seeing it in yourself. Because the seeing, what you are seeing is the conditioned. That which sees the conditioned is the unconditioned, that just looks. And so you can see in your life how periodically, maybe once or twice or three times a day, or who knows what frequency, that comes in. And then any situation will do, and certain situations bring it up even more, that need. Many people coming here to a strange environment. India is challenging. And so this, you can watch what comes up, all the reactivity, the reactive patterns that come up, that bring a heaviness to something that is just a situation out there, and the reactivity flows in and becomes very heavy. The condition, that is simply a condition, becomes heavy through the reactivity. So that's important to know, and so all that implies there's no space when that happens. You get drawn totally into form, because when you react against something, you react against some form which strengthens your own form identity. That's the form identity loves its reactivity. So in any interaction, in any situation, the question is, are you lost in that situation? Which means lost in the mind formations, the reaction, the mind stream, the words that are coming out of your mouth, the thoughts that are going through your head. And you're completely in it. No space. Where's the space? There's no space. It's just that. And then you talk to someone and just said, it's the... It could be any kind of talking. It could be gossip. It could be fearful. It could be angry. It could be, we must get something done, we can't allow this to happen. Well, whatever it is, it could be sad, but you're completely lost in that, and where's no space. Sometimes when people come to me and they talk to me and I can see they're totally lost in the mind interaction, I just wait until they come to an end, and that could take a while. And when they finally stop, then and just wait and look at them. And it sometimes happens that at that moment some space comes back in them, and then they wake up. And then the strange thing is you can see that no situation is really that heavy when there is space around it. It's only a situation. It's only different forms, limitations of forms appearing in some way. It's only one more situation expressing some form of limitation. Of course, it's the world of form. No more than that. And that no situation truly has that density and heaviness to it unless you give it to it. The world, actually, the world of form isn't that heavy and bad. It's the what you add to it makes it dense and heavy and incredibly magnifies what is there as the simplicity of some kind of situation. But through that which you carry inside, which is the need for suffering and for conflict, then magnifies, blows up that situation into something very big. And it's all ultimately constructs, it's all ultimately illusory entities being created. But it can look very big, so big that it might reach the evening news on TV. And then you know it's really heavy. If people knew that in certain places where this unconsciousness is particularly pronounced, there are certain parts in the world where there's enormous heaviness of conflict, they're just very simple situations which could be resolved by sitting together for a few minutes round a table with space around it, conditioned reaction with its need for conflict. Why is this need for conflict? To strengthen my sense of self. That is the illusion. Why are the Middle East and Northern Ireland... They are in conflict because they are defending and attempting to strengthen their sense of identity, collective sense of identity. In Ireland, they have several times a year, certain one faction has to march through the other religion's district. They've been doing it for 300-400 years because there was a battle 400 years ago in where they killed more than the others. And so they have to assert themselves by marching through whatever Protestant, Catholic. And they ask, why are they doing this? What is the point? Well, this is... It gives them their sense of self. They don't have no other. And the conflict sustains it. So to see that whatever life situation you may be in, it's simple. It is always simple. It does not have the heaviness. The heaviness comes through the projection, which is the need to enhance yourself through problems and conflict. It is the addiction to suffering, which is connected to having no identity beyond the little me. So it uses the world and makes it into a very heavy place. And the limitations that are inherent in the world of form become a very problematic life situation and a very problematic me. And slowly, the world turns into hell. And so, it's the little, just the little, is there space? Now, all that people are, when they are lost in form, mind form, physical form, reaction, conditioned reaction. They're all conscious of all these things, the forms. Now, what one could say, I'm just offering you one more pointer. If one doesn't work, the other one might. One could say space consciousness rather than object consciousness. The whole, almost everybody goes through this world totally occupied, totally dominated, totally identified with object consciousness. It's all this. And every object matters because you have nothing beyond it. Every object, including every mind object, which is every thought, including every emotion that comes with the thought, is object consciousness, and you're in it with your sense of self, each one. And space consciousness is absent in most people. The one thing that could redeem you, they don't know it. And it's so simple. It's all that is the essence of this teaching, is to teach space consciousness, not to get lost in form, not to get lost in mind. And what ultimately that is, I cannot explain. I'm doing the best perhaps that anybody can through language. It's a miracle that one can even talk about it. Because, of course, it eludes language, because language is form. It eludes thought. You cannot fully understand it. You can only get approximations of it through thought. It also would not be helpful to continue to elaborate and differentiate more and more the concepts and vocabulary that I use to describe that consciousness. That would take you, give you the illusion of understanding it if I differentiate it more and more, created new words to get another inch and another inch, and it would become a mental construct again. So I'm going only so far as to give you enough pointers, and that's it. The rest is, one could say, a direct transmission. Not that I am doing anything, it just happens. It's a direct transmission of presence or space consciousness, whatever you want to call it. And that is why I pointed out at the beginning of our retreat to be conscious of that dimension here that is beyond the words. So all that the words do, they point to that. But the essence is that dimension. Now, whether you call that space consciousness, whether you call that presence, or you call it stillness, or you call it the unconditioned consciousness, or you call it pure awareness, it doesn't matter. These are just little pointers. Or you call it consciousness without thought. Or you call it pure intelligence. Just another pointer. The pointer is not it. It's beyond the words. It's beyond the world. And yet it's here. It's beyond form. Yet it's here. How does it come into this world? Who knows? It's here. So to be open to that dimension as we sit here, which perhaps you can't say much about it, and yet it arises as the ability to just sit here in that alert stillness. That sense of spaciousness. And know for yourself at first hand what it is to be conscious without thought. Even if thought happens as occasional movement within that, it's fine. There's space around it. Space. And that is the only absolute. Everything else is relative in your life. Everything in your life matters relatively. Whether you succeed in the world, in the eyes of the world, whatever that means, which means the world is telling you that you've made it. Does that matter? Well, it matters relatively. If you need the mad world to tell you that you've made it, okay. Whether you are poor or rich, it matters relatively. Whether you live in a tiny little hut or a huge mansion, it's relative. Yes, it matters relatively. All the outer circumstances of your life, even whether your health is good or not, yes, But not absolutely. There's only one thing that matters absolutely, and that is whether you know yourself. Whether you know yourself beyond form. If you don't know yourself, none of those things that matter relatively can save you. To be important in the eyes of the world can't save you, doesn't give you peace, doesn't give you anything ultimately. To be wealthy doesn't save you. To live in a mansion doesn't save you. Mansions are full of unhappy people. Looking, still looking for themselves. They thought through the mansion they would find themselves because the self suddenly expanded into this huge mansion. And oh, they didn't find themselves in it. Only one thing matters absolutely, and that is this. Then the rest becomes very much secondary. It changes anyway. You can't rely on anything out here. You can't trust the world. We can't trust any form because it's going to leave you. Or you leave it. It dissolves. True trust is something else. Not to trust in anything that is form, but the state of absolute trust is the state of presence, where no form is needed to complete you, and no form can threaten you. So we are learning here what space consciousness is, but we're not really learning it. We are unlearning all those conditioned habits. We are relinquishing, looking through all those conditioned habits that obscure space consciousness, obscure presence, which is already here. It's strange, there are some places where particularly spiritual seekers are drawn, and this is one of them. For thousands of years they've been drawn here, and many of them remain seekers. They're looking for themselves in some, perhaps some experience, or perhaps a vision, or something to be added, and don't know that the very seeking obscures what's already here. So remember what I said before. Space consciousness, you can bring it into any interaction, and it is your job to do that, because that's how the world changes. The world consists of human interaction. You can bring it into any interaction through being in the state of attentive listening. That is the space. And then the problem may come when you start speaking. Then the tendency is, as the mind stream arises, it has a pull. And to get pulled soon after the mind stream starts, to be completely pulled into it and be completely dragged along by the mind stream as you speak. The words compulsively coming out of your mouth. And it'll be some kind of problem. or whatever, some kind of criticism, some kind of complaint, something that is matters, and you are so identified with comes out that you believe it to be the truth. A thought being the truth, a fragment, relative perspective, one of innumerable possible perspectives on a situation, on a person, and you take it to be the truth. So the mind stream, and this is not your personal problem again, it's the human, collective human mind. We talked about the pain body not being a personal matter, nor is the whole stream of thinking a personal matter. It's the human mind. There was a philosopher in the first half of the 20th century who made the strange statement, "We don't speak, language speaks through us." Perhaps to take it a step deeper, what he meant was, we don't think, thought thinks us. He's actually said, sorry, language speaks us. So we could say thought thinks us. It is a movement, an energy movement, an energy formation, collective, human. And the momentum of it is enormous. And so the moment you might be in a state of listening, you're listening to another person's space, and then you start to speak. At first it may be fine, there's still space around it. And then it can happen that very before you know it, you get drawn into complete identification with that mind stream, and it pulls you along. And then, of course, you completely believe in what you say. There's no perspective anymore. You're lost in the one little perspective. This could even be, even if you don't speak, it can happen. Thoughts going through your head, and you're totally lost in that. In whatever they say, you totally believe in, about yourself perhaps, about somebody else. So you're lost in the mind stream. And it could be a while before it comes to an end, because it will proliferate into another one, into another one. And it might need somebody to hit you on the head before you suddenly go,